In this podcast, I'm going to talk about a long-lost concept in chemistry called electron affinity. This is, given a neutral atom, how much does it want to attract an electron? This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. As part of my cardiac rehab, I'm just getting back in the saddle explaining a few things. And I suppose I'm a quantum physicist, a broad background in chemistry, and so you become aware that when you teach or organise chemistry courses, there's certain areas of chemistry which are just mysteriously left out. So let's look at electron affinity. This is a neutral atom plus an electron goes to a atom with a negative charge. The electron is now bound into that atom. And just thinking of it off the top of your head, a neutral atom, they've got equal numbers of electrons and protons. It's got a neutral charge. Why on earth would an electron want to actually spend its time with that atom? But let's go back to a more concrete concept in mainstream chemistry that majority of people look at, and that's the idea of ionization energy. That is, a neutral atom, usually plus a photon or plus heat, gets hit, and that loses an electron, and that goes to a atom less an atom, electron, so that's an atom with a plus charge, and an electron going out. And that's called ionization. So that's going from a neutral to create an ion and an electron. So different atoms have a different amount of energy required to liberate that electron from the atom. And although you're given lots of rules and filling of shells, it's basically quantum mechanics. It's the way the orbital, last orbital, in how closely that orbital sits to the nucleus. So if the last electron in is of a shape which actually goes close to the nucleus, that has a high ionization energy. And indeed, on the right-hand side of the periodic table, you have the noble gases, starting off with helium, neon, and so forth. All those have a particularly high ionization energy, an energy required to remove an electron. In fact, helium has a higher ionization energy than hydrogen. So if you ionize hydrogen, which hydrogen is just a proton plus an electron, if you ionize it, hit it with 13.6 electron volts of energy. I'm just trying to think what the wavelength of that is. 801 angstroms around that one. A high energy photon that will strip it apart. But helium, the electron is even more intensely bound. And it's even closer. And so the helium atom is smaller than the hydrogen atom, and that's got an ionization energy of 24 electron volts. You go over to metals, they've got a much lower ionization energy. The electron, the shape of the electron going in is a shape that spends a long time away from the nucleus, so it can't get quite close to a nucleus. So if I had, a classical electron and a classical proton, the two would go further and further together and have an infinite binding energy. The actual physical size of the electron, physical three-dimensional shape of the electron, limit how close it can actually get into to the nucleus. And in quantum mechanics, where there are no surfaces, it's actually true that the electron is a large object, and the proton sits actually physically inside the electron, or there is some electron inside the nucleus. And this is known as spectroscopy, as the Lamb shift, this subtle effect. The electron actually spends a bit of time, is actually physically Some of it is actually inside the nucleus. But let's get back to this idea of electron affinity. So electron affinity was very much in vogue Lavoisier's time, in very early chemistry before, I suppose, school chemistry came up, and is the subject of many literary works where they discuss. Goethe wrote a book called, I think, The Affinity of Love or something like that, where he is basically a chemistry romance, and he used the analogy of chemistry to describe this various romance. Let's get back to what electron affinity is. So if I have a vacuum, a bottle, and I have a single atom in it, and I have a single electron in it, I shake it together, that electron will either decide I'd like to be away from that nucleus, that atom that's got no charge, or it can actually go close to that atom and see very locally a positive charge and actually sit inside it. So for most, for the following substances, they're of the former group, that is, they've got no interest. They're the noble gases and the noble metals, which are the last row on the D block, which is, let me see, copper, from the one above copper. I suppose it's probably nickel, copper, and mercury. These things are with very low electron affinity. So if you put an individual atom and an electron in a box, a calorimeter, and you shook it up together, you'd see no increase in heat. And so you've got your noble gases, which are complete with electrons, and your noble metals, which is copper. I have to think of it just because I'm talking off the top of my head, I can't quite remember. Mercury is a noble metal. It's got a negative electron affinity. So if you actually had a mercury Hg minus and put it in your calorimeter, your vacuum calorimeter, you'd leave it. It would actually break apart and give out a little bit of heat. Now the opposite is true for almost every other atom. Every other atom, besides these, actually prefer, even though they're neutral, they've got an equal number of electrons and protons, they actually prefer to have another electron in with it at close range. And let's try and get our mind around it. So just to give you a view, the metal with the greatest electron affinity is gold, for instance. That's quite an amazing thing to do. I often look at the energy levels of gold and have a good think about it. Rubidium has got a very low electron affinity, so it's got an attraction for electron, but it's the lowest attraction. So if I had I think it's a rubidium or one of those things in the group 1 metals, and I put a single atom an electron in a calorimeter, and I sugar it together, what would happen is the electron would actually stick to the rubidium, and a little bit of heat would be produced. Quite a lot of heat would be produced if I had a gold, an electron in, and the most with the fluorine, the halogens. These are group 7s, and you have in traditional chemistry, you would say, oh, well, the electron fills the shell. Obviously, there's no knowledge in that, but this is a good graphical way of drawing it. So, for fluorine, for instance, let's do the graphic way we would draw it. We would draw the Lewis dots, going for the Drude diagram, a circle, an F, a circle with the two inner electrons, and then on the outside of that, we'd have 7 more electrons. In little pairs, so we'd have 2 down the bottom, 2 to the left, 2 at the top, and 1 sitting by itself to the left. So you draw those electrons in pairs because that's the school way of drawing spin, saying that electrons on the shells are in pairs. And I suppose you have to get used to it. A lot of people, incorrectly put electrons not at 4 points around a circle, but at 8 points around a circle. But indeed, they're pairs, spin up and spin down. So I've got that fluorine plus an electron, an E minus. And you say, well, that will go to an F minus. So if I put it, the fluorine and the electron in a calorimeter, in vacuum, and I shook it together, the electron would actually stick to the fluorine, stick inside, would find a local, it would, in space, it would just bounce locally, and it would see at a particular angle as that fluorine rotated, it would see a positive nucleus and actually slip into it. Now, the way we would draw that is drawing a square bracket around our atom, a diagram of atoms, and this is a way of, say, putting this in a viewfinder, and we would draw the inner circle with 2, and then the outer circle with 8, and on the outside we'd put a minus sign to say, well, this is a drawing, but we're telling you that there's an additional charge. It's just the traditional way of drawing it. And that energy is called the electron affinity. Now, the full understanding of this is, basically there's two ways to go. One is that you can just rote learn it, or you can actually go into quantum mechanics see basically how electrons don't actually see the other electrons. When they're coming up to a atom, they don't necessarily overlap or see the other electrons. They do interfere, but the idea of each new electron wave function is orthogonal to the previous electron wave functions. And in order to do that, they become sufficiently large and ornate, but they're still orthogonal. That means that if you integrate one electron wave function of the next electron coming in with any of the previous electron functions, that is, you take an electron wave function of the electron coming in and another electron which is resonant in the atom, and you integrate it over X, Y, Z, they have to be the complex conjugate of each other, the actual integral is zero. That is, the electrons are actually, although they cover each other in space, their net overlap is zero. And so this is quantum mechanics. So let's just get a few quantum mechanics views for you. Quantum mechanics, the electrons are large. There's no such thing as surfaces. You have to consider phases, and you put the two together. And in essence, the sort of way to imagine this is the fluorine as a fuzzy orbital, and as you rotate it, there's a way in which, for a particular view in space, you can actually see through the electron clouds and actually see an exposed positive charge of the nucleus at close range. So at far range it's neutral, but at very close range the electron can actually see a positive charge and will actually slip into that fluorine. And so this is one of the things to get your mind around, that F minus in a vacuum is more stable than F neutral and a minus. There's actually a positive charge it can slip into. And so this is in space, although just trying to give an analogy, a meteor in space, that's at low energy, but there's even lower energy when that meteor crashes down to Earth. Now, in this case, the meteor is actually larger than Earth. It's hard to get your mind around it, and it actually doesn't crash, it actually slips through Earth, so to speak. So the electron, when it comes into the fluorine, actually slips through it in space. Now, this is all heresy. not heresy, it's hard for in school chemistry to actually explain this is actually what's happening. I suppose the take-home message here is that people spend a bit of time talking about ionization. That's where you've got a neutral atom and you take an electron away, because that's easy to understand. That's because that's in our physical world. I can have a little plasticine physical model. I don't need supercomputers or years of experience looking at Schrodinger wave equations to understand. Electron affinity, we can sort of define what it is, define how it is, and look at the table and look at the trends, but we actually never get into the actual basics that electron affinity is an electron seeing a positive charge in a nucleus quantum mechanically. It's got so much quantum mechanics in it. And it's rather interesting in that when you look at the history of chemistry, it was very much a path that people were going along, looking at electron affinities and understanding chemistry in terms of that. But as teaching took hold, and the concrete way of teaching and dots, electrons as dots on blackboards, electron affinity has sort of been swept underneath the carpet. Now, there's a symbol for electron affinity, and I recommend looking up on the internet, just typing in electron affinity and looking at the electron affinity of some of the atoms and looking at the trends, and you'll see an increase in electron affinity as you get up to halogens, and it will trend right down to zero, or actually negative electron affinity. Electrons hate being in there for the noble gases and the noble metals. So, look, thanks for listening, and I'll just try and do a few of these podcasts where I get into these areas of science which diplomacy is letting everybody down in terms of, as a scientist, you discover these things, you understand these things, you talk with educators, and they become quite aggressive. They say, look, we do not want to talk about it. And so this is an opportunity as a scientist to tell you about these things. And again, look up on the internet electron affinity, look up ionization, and see if you can get an understanding of it. It's a worthwhile thing to actually understand, and it's not comforting, but it's a way that getting into it, you'll start to imagine, actually live those electron wave functions, those non-localized electron wave functions as they get into atoms to try and understand it. Thanks for listening. This is Peter Hill Explains.